When I reached the opening to the surface, I took a big breath of fresh air and managed to calm myself down. Zai laughed, saying he was proud of me that I dared going that far down inside this narrow tunnel. Researching further, I found astounding corroborations on the existence of an underground city under the Giza Plateau. First, on ancient Sumerian cylinder seals, fragmented into several pieces, we find written records of the Anunnaki and their secret abode, described as, an underground place, entered through a tunnel, its entrance hidden by sand and by what they call a Huwana. His teeth as the teeth of a dragon, his face the face of a lion. He, Huwana, is unable to move forward, nor is he able to move back, but they crept up on him from behind, and the way to the secret abode of the Anunnaki was no longer blocked. A higher up view of the access to the undergrounds I had the privilege to see Herodotus, ancient Greek cartographer and historian from the 5th century BC, ventured in the Fayum Oasis, a few miles west from the Nome of Memphis, that includes the Giza Plateau. He found there a vast labyrinth of impressive size, which he qualified as an endless wanderer. It contained up to 1,500 rooms and an equal amount of subterranean chambers which he was not allowed to visit. According to the local folklore, this hidden underground complex contained a mythical hall of records, where was compiled the lost knowledge of the ancients, stored there before the great flood. This is what Herodotus wrote about it: "There I saw 12 palaces regularly disposed, which had communication with each other, interspersed with terraces and arranged around 12 halls. It is hard to believe they are the work of man." The baffling and intricate passages from room to room and from court to court were endless wonders to me. As we passed from a courtyard into rooms, from rooms into galleries, from galleries into more rooms and thence, into yet more courtyards, the roof of every chamber, courtyard and gallery is like the walls of stone. The walls are covered with carved figures, and each court is exquisitely built of white marble and surrounded by a colonnade. Near the corner where the labyrinth ends, there is a pyramid, 240 feet in height, with great carved figures of animals on it and an underground passage by which it can be entered. I was told very credibly that underground chambers and passages connected this pyramid with the pyramids at Memphis, Giza. A 4th century BC, Roman historian Aminus Marcellinus documented the existence of passageways leading inside the Great Pyramid of Giza, Khufu. Inscriptions which the ancients asserted were engraved on the walls of certain underground galleries and passages were constructed deep in the dark interior to preserve ancient wisdom from being lost in the flood. A century later, Syrian Neoplatonist philosopher Iambicus of Apamea recorded information on an underground tunnel system beneath Giza, accessed through the body of the Sphinx. This entrance obstructed in our day by sands and rubbish may still be traced between the four legs of the crouched colossus. It was formerly closed by a bronze gate whose secret spring could be operated only by the magi it was guarded by. Public respect and a sort of religious fear maintained its inviolability better than armed protection would have done. In the belly of the Sphinx were cut out galleries leading to the subterranean part of the Great Pyramid. These galleries were so artfully crisscrossed along their course to the pyramid and setting forth into the passage without a guide throughout this network, one ceasingly and inevitably returned to the starting point. A Greek philosopher, Crantor, in 300 BC, claimed that a set of underground pillars in Egypt contained written stone records of prehistory. 1st century Greek philosopher Strabo also claimed to have visited the labyrintha, which he called a great palace composed of many palaces. In the same century, Roman historian Pliny the Elder wrote about the bewildering maze of paths that made up the underground complex. He reported that beneath the Sphinx was a concealed tomb of a ruler named Harmachis that contains a great treasure. Interestingly, the Great Sphinx was once called the Great Sphinx Harmachis, who mounted guard since the time of the followers of Horus. At around the same time, Greek historian Diodorus provided a sumptuous description of the labyrinth at TMS Majesty. A.O. When one has entered the sacred enclosure, one found a temple surrounded by columns to each side, and this building had a roof made of a single stone carved with panels and richly adorned, with excellent paintings. It contained memorials of the homeland of each of the kings as well as of the temples and sacrifices carried out in it, all skillfully worked in paintings of the greatest beauty. A manuscript compiled by an Arab writer, Al-Tlaymani, and preserved in the British Museum, records the existence of a long, square, underground passage between the Great Pyramid and the River Nile with a strange thing blocking the Nile entrance. He related the following episode. A.O. In the days of Ahmed ibn Talaun, a party entered the Great Pyramid through the tunnel and found in a side chamber a goblet of a glass of rare color and texture. As they were leaving, they missed one of the party and, upon returning to seek him, he came out to them naked and laughing said, "A.O. do not follow or seek for me," and then rushed back into the pyramid. His friends perceived that he was enchanted. Upon learning about strange happenings under the pyramid, Ahmed ibn Talaun expressed a desire to see the goblet of glass. During the examination, it was filled with water and weighed, then emptied and re-weighed. The historian wrote that it was found to be of the same weight when empty as when full of water. Interestingly, 10th century Arab historian Masudi claimed that advanced mechanical statues were guardians of the subterranean galleries located under the Great Pyramid of Giza. He says they were programmed to destroy all AO except those who by their conduct were worthy of admission. This, to me, cries to be advanced technology only letting pass those who can rise on a higher frequency, a hypothesis that was confirmed to me a few years later after my mission at Giza. Masudi goes on. A.O. Written accounts of wisdom and acquirement in the different arts and sciences were hidden deep, that they might remain as records for the benefit of those who could afterward comprehend them. I have seen things that one does not describe for fear of making people doubt an IMP's intelligence. But still I have seen them. I took this photo, 1998, from the terrace overlooking the left side of the Sphinx, showing workers taking away the soil from the excavations under the monument. The content of these Moktafs or baskets will be sieved, documented, stored in secret sheds and eventually sent to the Cairo Museum or TMS storage rooms. Hieroglyphics for AO Record Room or Hall of Records. In 1773, explorer Charles Thompson noted a hole in the top of the back of the Sphinx. In 1798, French archaeologist and artist Vivant Denon sketched an image of the Sphinx which showed a man climbing out of a hole in its head. By the 1928 EMS, an aerial photograph taken from a hot air balloon distinctly showed a hole in the top of the head of the Sphinx, leaving no ambiguity. V. Denon at EMS depicting men coming out of a hole on the top of the Sphinx at EMS head, 1798. On February 16, 1923, archaeologists discovered the tomb of the pharaoh Tutankhamun which had been undisturbed for more than 3,000 years. The magnitude of the discovery ensured widespread acclaim all across the world and led to a surge of archaeologists and treasure hunters descending on Egypt. By the 1938 EMS, countless new discoveries had been made, but perhaps the most incredible was yet to come. In 1935, incredible stories emerged after a decade-long clearing project took place. Between the Great Sphinx and the Great Pyramid, four enormous vertical shafts, each approximately 8 feet square, leading into inner chambers through solid limestone, were discovered. An article published by Hamilton M. Wright described the existence of these areas under Giza. This information is still denied by the Egyptian authorities despite extensive evidence. A.O. We have discovered a subway used by the ancient Egyptians of 5,000 years ago. It passes beneath the causeway leading between the Second Pyramid and the Sphinx. It provides a means of passing under the causeway from the Cheops Pyramid to the Pyramid of Khefren. From this subway, we have unearthed a series of shafts leading down more than 125 feet, with roomy courts and side chambers. A. It appeared that Wright and his team had discovered a sort of secret city under the Giza Plateau. For the rest of that year, articles and stories appeared in academic journals and across mainstream news, detailing further findings such as buildings, hallways and walls, support columns, delicate stonework carvings and beautiful painted decoration, all hidden beneath the ground. Photographs of this underground city were taken and shown to various experts, who were deeply impressed. Then, all of a sudden, without warning, the story disappeared from media coverage. Egyptian authorities suddenly diverted attention to new initiatives while archaeologists shifted their focus to new tombs and other treasures which have come to define Egyptology. Why would the world suddenly ignore the extraordinary discovery of a metropolis beneath Giza? Despite all these historical, scientific and concrete evidences, all from multiple unquestionable sources, in an article from 1972 in an Egyptian newspaper, the following statement was made. No one should pay any attention to the preposterous claims in regard to the interior of the Great Pyramid or the presumed passageways and unexcavated temples and halls beneath the sand in the Pyramid District made by those who are as associated with the so-called secret cults or mystery societies of Egypt and the Orient. These things exist only in the minds of those who seek to attract the seekers for mystery, and the more we deny the existence of these things, the more the public is led to suspect that we are deliberately trying to hide that which constitutes one of the great secrets of Egypt. It is better for us to ignore all of these claims than merely deny them. All of our excavations in the territory of the Pyramid have failed to reveal any underground passageways or halls, temples, grottos, caves, or anything of the kind except the one temple adjoining the Sphinx. In 1978, Dr. Jim Huttack mapped an extraordinary underground system under the Giza Plateau that combines intricate man-made passageways and subterranean rivers and tunnels, using ground-penetrating radar. Dr. Huttack said he recorded massive chambers that are a larger than the largest cathedrals ever erected by modern man. He mentioned a gigantic underground metropolis located beneath the Giza Plateau, at least to be 15,000 years old. Edgar Cayce, 1877-1945, well-renowned American clairvoyant, prophesied that the mythical Hall of Records would be discovered in the 1998 EMS underneath the front paw of the Great Sphinx of Giza. Further, he asserted that the Sphinx was not 4,500 years old, as it was commonly believed, but 10,000 years old or more. Between 1991 and 1993, a series of studies were conducted under the leadership of Egyptologist John Anthony West and geologist Robert Schock. They took seismic and geological surveys of the ground around the Sphinx, which results were presented for the world to see, in an hour-long documentary titled, The Mystery of the Sphinx, watched in prime time by more than 30 million people. Stunningly, the documentary announced that seismic surveys had revealed a series of unexplained tunnels and chambers underneath the Sphinx. Could this be the mythical Hall of Records as Cayce had predicted? Before any questions could be answered, Egyptian authorities led by the governmental TMS Chief Inspector of Antiquities Dr. Zahi Hawass, stepped in and shut down the research. J.A. West and R. Schock were expelled from the site, while Dr. Hawass derisively called their findings American hallucinations. In the 1998 EMS, at the same time as J.A. West and R. Schock were expelled from their research around the Sphinx, another team led by German robot engineer Rudolf Gattenbrink sent a small robot equipped with a camera down an unexplored shaft within the Great Pyramid of Khufu, Cheops. Halfway through, the robot encountered a small door with two small copper handles. Gattenbrink and his team were instantly shut down and banned from further exploration. Nonetheless, in 1993, a local Egyptian newspaper documented that large cavities had been discovered during a survey conducted at Giza by Dr. Zahi Hawass. Workers repairing the ailing Sphinx have discovered an ancient passage leading deep into the body of the mysterious monument. The Jizu Antiquities Chief, Mr. Zai Hawass, said there was no dispute the tunnel was very old. However, what is puzzling is, who built the passage? Why? Moreover, where does it lead? Mr. Hawass said he had no plans to remove the stones blocking the entrance. The secret tunnel burrows into the northern side of the Sphinx, about halfway between the Sphinx's TMS outstretched paws and its tail. In 1996, the Egyptian authorities conducted further surveys around the Sphinx and a video was released, showing Dr. Zai Hawass entering an underground tunnel through a hole in the Sphinx. Once inside, he said, "Ayo, even Indiana Jones will never dream to be here. Can you believe it? We are now inside the Sphinx, in this tunnel. This tunnel has never been open before. No one really knows what's inside this tunnel, but we are going to open it for the first time." On that teaser, the video ends. Later that same year, Dr. Hawass began to openly proclaim that not one but a series of tunnels existed under the Sphinx, and that these tunnels carry many secrets about the building of the pyramids. By 1998, Dr. Hawass himself personally conducted excavations below the Sphinx, and all of a sudden, he reversed his position again. The project was abruptly shut down and Dr. Hawass strangely asserted that there was absolutely nothing under the Sphinx. Despite this, and according to some reports, a part of the underground's areas can be now accessed from inside the Sphinx with stairs cut into the solid rock, leading down to the cavern system below the bedrock of the River Nile. The huge, complex underground system seems to extend east, toward the city of Cairo. So why the denial of incontrovertible facts? Why the strange flip-flopping positions of Dr. Zai Hawass? Well, unfortunately, this type of thing is not rare when it comes to archaeology in Egypt. Egyptologists are well aware of a secret A mafia that controls research and suppresses new information. Documents show that as far back as the 1838 EMS, French engineers conducted a considerable excavation in front of the Sphinx and had discovered a doorway leading further underground when a shadowy forces are compelled to suspend their work. In 2008, the same fate occurred with the Matau expedition, a research project in Hawara, a few miles outside Giza, using advanced ground-penetrating radar. They located the remnants of an ancient underground city with massive chambers and tunnels beneath the ground. Some of the rooms measured up to 100 by 150 meters. The results of their survey were published in a scientific journal and presented in academic lectures. Until the day when, without a warning, the Egyptian authorities shut the project down and attempted to suppress the release of all findings. In an article from April 30, 2019, for the newspaper AO, the Egyptian Sunni Zai Hawass denies the existence of a city under the Sphinx but nonetheless declares the existence of three tunnels under the monument. I had the opportunity in 1998 to also visit a part of the undergrounds under the Pyramid of Giza in Saqqara, near the Giza Plateau. There was an inspector from the Antiquity Board to accompany me, and he ended the visit near a deep well at the bottom of which I could see the access to another tunnel going deeper down under the bedrock. The Dark Overseers. I don't yet believe personally that it is the Egyptian government who makes these unfortunate decisions and intentionally withhold crucial archaeological information to the public. Why would they do that? Why would a country whose economy thrives on tourism do that? It makes no sense. And I don't yet believe for one second either, that Dr. Zai Hawass had anything to do with these censorship measures. I worked with the man. He is very passionate and proud of the glory of his country TMS ancient history. He would never miss an opportunity to share with the world any new discovery. Censorship is not who he is. We must pay attention to the thread of events, and on how he was constantly silenced on every newer discovery having to do with anything below the surface of the Giza Plateau. I believe that he was ordered by higher authorities to shut down these missions, for reasons that remain unclear to this day. The orders would have come from higher up, from a shadowy upper hierarchy. But who are they? Well, I happen to have some idea. These are times of truth, right? So later TMS speak the truth. I have some experience myself with working in Egypt, and I can tell you a small but significant story from back in 2003 when I worked in the temples of Karnak, in Luxor. This story is worth a book in itself, one day, and I will summarize it here. The Kfitk, where I worked during 8 years of my life as an archaeologist, is a permanent Franco-Egyptian archaeological mission founded in 1967 by French Minister André Tilde Copyright Malraux in cooperation with the Egyptian government. The team was comprised of a dozen of yearly students, in different fields related to archaeology, coordinated by a group of permanent researchers, which I was part of, supervised by an executive director who is always an architect at TM, who is in turn supervised by a scientific director affiliated with higher academic and governmental organizations. After that level, it is lost in the heights of hierarchical mysteries for the common of mortals. One day, chilling out after my work near the Karnak Temple TMS main entrance, I noticed my executive director, the architect, walking out through the security door with his head down. When the architect saw me, he sighed deeply. This man was involved in ongoing and despicable activity with local young boys whom he would bring at night to the mission and who would then aedize a peerer. He was arrested once by the Egyptian police, but released through the intercession of some higher governmental authority. His surname was Aeth Snakeya. It is true that he looked like a shape-shifting reptilian. His eyes were slanted and his nose hooked. His ageless body was muscular and perfect. His only daily meal was a steak. Anyone who tried to speak was silenced in a very discouraging way, so no one wanted to chance it. I eventually spoke, myself, which caused me a few hard-boiled adventures. Anyway, despite the fact that he was not my favorite person, he was my boss. So that morning, in front of the Temple TMS entrance, I felt I was kind of obliged to say something. I had never seen him that dejected before, and due to his demeanor, that day he spoke more spontaneously to me. "What a TMS the matter?" I asked him. He shook his head as if chasing anxious thoughts, and he replied with a contained anger. "I am really fed up with this stupid war between Freemasons over who possesses Karnak. Theatre everywhere, they hold everything." Bang! He said it. And he walked away towards the Isis TM block. I stumbled on my feet and took a deep breath. So Karnak was the property of the Freemasons? That was true, and they were arguing over it between lodges, I suppose, or maybe just between high-level individuals. This incident happened right at the time when a new scientific director was due to be elected, and there was a whole drama about that, as the existing one, Mr. Gao, wanted to keep his position at all costs. As we had a vote power, we, other personnel at TM, had been hassled and coerced for months to take side in favor of Mr. G. I personally don't yet TMT buy into drama, so I voted blank. This was worthy of a response from the scientific director, Mr. Gao, obviously a Freemason, who said this to me in a thunderous voice. If you are not with us, you are against us. At the time, I had no idea of the meaning and the consequences of such words coming from a high-level Freemason. I replied to him, TMS interesting. I think I heard US President George W. Bush saying that exact same thing on TV a few days ago. At this time, President Bush was aiming to attack Iraq. Oh my goodness. His jaw dropped and he looked at me in a fierce and angry expression. Proud of my forthright remark, I turned on my heels and walked away, chin up. Unfortunately, this day marked the beginning of a series of plots and attacks against me, but in the end I do not regret a thing. Never in my life have I ever allowed myself to be coerced, and I can look at myself in the mirror with tremendous respect for the person I see. After I refused to take side in this vote in Egypt, my life took a spiral down to hell. 4 years later, in March 2007, I left the mission under threats and visceral fear. IATMV never spoken about this to anyone before, but I can mention the basics about what happens to me afterwards, as it becomes relevant now in this context. As you read this, please consider the bravery it takes to publicly expose the following. The pressure on me from the architect steadily intensified. I was increasingly challenged with most difficult work, and was ordered relentlessly to start back at the beginning again and again. Everything had changed from the moment I dared to stand up to a highly degreed Freemason. In early 2007, I uncovered a traffic of antique statue heads, in the temple, ran by my bosses and a few Egyptians. Actually, there is a photo of me archiving one of these heads after they were retrieved and placed in a safe storeroom, the author archiving one of the statue heads after their safe retrieval. These heads are now safe in the Luxor Egyptian Museum. My French bosses were furious because I had alerted the Egyptian authorities. Apparently, I was too much of a troublemaker and it was time they got rid of me. By March 2007, they had set a final trap for me by hacking my email address and sending an implausible email on my behalf to several diplomatic addresses, depicting me as basically a terrorist. I was devastated, submerged by a powerless feeling. The architect told me that if I didn't attempt to leave Egypt immediately, I would be thrown into an Egyptian prison, raped and tortured. I was so shocked and broken that I believed him. I was shaking, terrified, as I traveled back to France. I recall hiding behind a couch in the Cairo airport, thinking that the Egyptian army would come and arrest me. Which of course was a fantasy invented to keep me scared and compliant. I would remain traumatized for years, requiring therapy to heal from what these scumbags had done to me. Once I arrived in Paris, I was surprised to receive on another email address, a letter from Dr. Zahawas, saying that he was very shocked by what had happened to me, and that he hated with great passion those who ran the Karnak mission. I was aware of this already but never knew the real reasons. He said that he knew who had defamed me and vowed that he would restore the honor on my name over there. In order to do so, Zai offered me a permanent job as his assistant in Cairo. I was absolutely terrified and broken, in a state of shock, and it wasn't the idea of returning to Egypt that scared me the most, but more than anything else I could not go near an airport without having PTSD. I couldn't face it at the time. I gave the excuse that my health couldn't handle the high level of pollution in Cairo, but Zai, gentleman of honor, said that his offer would remain open the time I heal and recover my strength. This is the reason why I will always defend Dr. Zahawas, because he is an honorable man. And also because he despises with rage and fire the Freemasons who have their affairs in Egypt. Once I was back in Paris, the Dark Ones didn't leave me alone. I hired a lawyer who, and as a consequence, two people in power were fired from their jobs, the French consul in Cairo. I have no doubt that Zai did help a bit, as the Minister of Antiquities, and the scientific director at the Sorbonne in Paris who held the position above Aramis Degas. And then, this happened. Aramis is the director of research in Dendera, for whom I worked for a couple of missions there and who initiated me to Egyptian magic, took me under her wings as soon as I arrived in Paris. I knew as a matter of fact, that Aramis Degas feared her. She probably knew a few stuff about him that kept him quiet. She wanted him to make peace with me and said we needed to meet and have a conversation. I was terrified at the idea but I took my courage in hands and I agreed. Aramis Sa was a very powerful and impetuous woman and she acted straight away. She took me to a sumptuous and imposing building, Aolat-e-Mercad-8-Copyright-Me-Fran-8-Section-A-Z-A, where Aramis Degas was to be received as a member. She said I could meet him in the antechamber before the ceremony began. Because I was with her, it allowed me to pass certain doors. And here I am, in my work clothes, pale and exhausted, in this opulent Baroque-style building, in a hall decorated with extravagantly sculpted columns plated with gold leaves. I said to Mrs. Sayo, this is not my place here, I want to go. She told me to just be quiet and follow her lead. Mr. Gantered the hall. He is a big man with piercing crystal blue eyes, And he wore his white curly hair in a bang, just like the images on Roman coins. You couldn't TMT look into his eyes. They had this infinite light inside.